Hello, I'm Adam Morgan, founder of Eat Big Fish, and you're listening to the Overthrow podcast in conjunction with PhD. And this is a podcast all about how a challenger mindset can help brands and businesses thrive today. This month, I'm joined by Tom Klein, the CMO of MailChimp, the Atlanta-based marketing platform that started life in email marketing, but has now grown to offer websites, digital advertising, social media, and even creates its own award-winning documentaries, as we'll come on to hear. And in this episode, we'll find out how and why MailChimp builds such very real and human connections with its customers. And Tom candidly shares a personal blooper moment from early on in his MailChimp career and the lesson he gained from that. And in fact, we'll talk about why he thinks blooper moments more generally and a marketer having their own blooper reel is actually so important for them. And I'm then joined by Olivia Douglas, the Global Business Lead, PhD US, as we unpack together what we found most interesting from that conversation with Tom. And we pull together the key learnings from MailChimp's success as a B2B challenger brand. Well, Tom, welcome to the Overthrow podcast.
Thank you, Adam. It's a delight to be here.
And so for those few people in the world who don't know what MailChimp is or what you do, tell us just briefly kind of what is MailChimp, what do you do, and perhaps indeed why it's important for you to think like a challenger.
Yes, the description is really we're an all-in-one marketing platform, but the way I actually like to say it is we're essentially everything you need to grow your business online. Because as a marketer, I like to have a much grander ambition, I think.
Right.
And as it relates to why is it important to be a challenger, especially for us, for MailChimp, as we've grown, and as we've added new categories, right? So we've been in email for a very long time. But as we've added more capabilities around websites and domains and buy buttons and surveys and social posting and really this whole universe, we are a challenger every time we go into a new category or launch a new product. Mm-hmm. And so the challenger spirit is I am the little guy again. And so it's a really useful mindset, really, for everyone to kind of have access to.
And so how does that kind of manifest itself? So clearly you're B2B. The kind of convention says that B2B is quite rational. It's quite straightforward. You know, people aren't sort of buying in the same emotional way as they're buying in a kind of B2C category. But that's not your point of view, is it? You're taking a very different, much more emotional stance and relationship here.
It's at some level we're all consumers, right? Mm. Even the rational, or I'm using air quotes, that's not doing me any good, is it? the rational, the so-called rational B2B buyer, I think even the most B2B transactions, it's there's a lot that you can rationalize away. You know, essentially you use logic to give yourself permission to do what your emotion is telling you to do. Hmm. And our approach is certainly, especially in the small business world, our customers are probably closer in many instances to being consumers. I think it's definitely more effective for us to at least speak to the whole person, if you will, the more emotional or the more sort of consumer oriented, as well as the more rational. So people can make that decision of, which side of their brain are they going to listen to?
And how did you arrive at that as a kind of key part of the strategy? Was that an accident? Was that kind of a stroke of genius? Was it actually just a natural reflection of the culture? Where did that come from? That
I would love to take credit for it, but I think it's our founder, Ben Chestnut, who had that insight of, let's speak to our customers like they're humans, not, sort of super logical robot-like businesses, when the reality is they're just like, you and me.
Yeah. Well, and in Overthrow, obviously, we talk about you as the kind of wonderful example of real and human. Tell us a little bit about how that shows up. Give us kind of some of your kind of highlights, best of, how does it manifest itself? Well, maybe look, so imagine that I am one of your customers. How does it show up for me as one of your customers?
If you're one of my customers, what I am trying to do is essentially model the behavior that I hope will inspire you and create a connection with you. So what I find so often is that, you know, in this, especially in this B2B space, there's a lot of trying to tell you what to do or tell you how to do things, or, you know, like, hey, do these 10 things to be successful, for example, which is the kind of thing that I really don't like and doesn't feel like a way to create a connection. So when you say, you know, what are the highlights? You know, I prefer what really creates a connection is the lowlights or the bloopers, right? Mm-hmm. So the, you know, what I'm looking to do is show up as we're a real company. We are certainly trying to make our customers successful. But what a lot of times what does that is, hey, we will be astoundingly creative, inventive, unexpected to create that connection. One of my favorite things to show people to try to help explain this concept is we have, you can just look at the MailChimp site and our embrace of illustration, but there's a particularly funny one that we use, which is, you know, a guy sitting on a snake sharing a cup of coffee, and, you know, they look at each other, then the guy sticks his tongue out and it turns out that he has a snaked tongue. And then high five with the snake on the snake's rattle. And it's just a little sort of animated GIF, but it's a, you know, that took time. It's basically a little piece of art about, you know, a snake and a person kind of connecting. And it's a tiny thing. It's teeny tiny, but it's incredibly instructive that that's a lot of heart that goes into something that's going to make that. And then when our customers see it, they feel seen, right? And then they know that this is the kind of place that I think I might want to do business with.
Mm. So one of the things that I loved most that you said in Overthrow 2 was that, you know, you needed to be a yellow banana in a sea of blue. Tell us a little bit about that. And then tell us a little bit about how that manifests itself in the MailChimp culture.
The way I like to describe it is think about anybody who's listening, think about the company that you're in and think about how likely your company would be to say, develop an ad and then have that ad, you know, a radio ad, have that, a podcast ad, really, have that podcast ad essentially mispronounce the name of your company. How likely would your current leadership be to say, oh, that's fine, just go ahead and run with it, right? And so, which is, of course, the story of Serial. So the Serial podcast ad, somebody, instead of saying MailChimp, said MailKimp. Now, there's probably not many places in the world where they would say, oh, well, that just sounds like a goof. Let's run with it. It is just, again, sort of every fiber in the, and, you know, there's not many B2B players who would do that either, right? Yeah. So that spirit was there. I inherited that when I came to MailChimp a little over 5 years ago.
So for those who are not familiar with that campaign, can you just play out for us a little bit more some of the other mispronunciations of MailChimp that you played with and how that showed up?
Well, so that in 2014 was the original MailChimp ad that appeared in Serial. And then I believe it was 2 years later, we decided that we wanted to actually launch a campaign called Did You Mean MailChimp? And I'm going to fail on probably remembering all of the permutations of it, but it was essentially taking the name MailChimp and creating a bunch of different things that sounded like it and just really pouring our heart and just crafting incredible executions, right? That were, you know, so that had, you know, videos and we did an online game. We tried to take male crimp happen, which was men crimping their hair. We made basically a synthesizer of whale noises, which was whale synth. Basically, it was a love letter. It was like a digital love letter to the creative class, and it's still out there in great number. There are 9 different nine different permutations. One's called Kale Limp,
right?
Which is a video of it's actually a golden retriever. No golden retrievers were harmed, covered in kale, and swimming in a pool to a thing called Plantasia, if you're a synthesizer nerd.
Right.
So it was quite a campaign. I think we've moved beyond that to sort of apply the same level of rigor to the content that we create. I'd say the latest permutation was, you know, because of the pandemic, the South by Southwest Shorts Film Festival was essentially canceled.
Right.
And so what we did this year was we essentially created a new home for it on MailChimp Presents. And it was free to everybody, right? So it was really sort of informed by generous spirit more than anything. Mm-hmm. That was an amazing thing that happened so incredibly fast. And it was the team's doing, right? I mean, I ostensibly run marketing, but that kind of stuff isn't possible with a top down approach, right? Mm-hmm. So we have wonderful creative teams that just said, we need to do something about that. And, you know, they need to feel like they have license to say, let's go make that happen. That's a good thing in the world. And so we just did it.
Yeah.
And so tell us a little bit, Tom, about MailChimp Presents and how that kind of reflects a kind of real and human way of connecting with small business owners.
Sure. MailChimp Presents is essentially our way of speaking to the emotional journey of an entrepreneur. You know, whether it's, you know, videos or podcasts, we're talking about that journey at different points of the journey. And I think we are trying to connect with people before they even recognize maybe a lot of the terminology, a lot of the things they're going to encounter in a business. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorites is one of our most successful is a film called 73 Cows. It is really beautifully filmed. It's a BAFTA winner, I believe. It is it's only about 20 minutes long. And, you know, it is the story of essentially cattle rancher who decides that as a vegan, he can no longer be in the business. Hmm. And he doesn't feel, his conscience will not let him continue in the business that he's in. And so he has to figure out what to do. And it is, I just love it. Right. So, I mean, when you see it, it just has an impact on you, that I don't think most people expect. Mm. I would call it it's like the most beautiful pivot story ever made.
Right.
Right. If you want to understand what is it like to be in a business that for some reason or another is no longer viable, and you have got to get into another business, and you have all the constraints of employees and demands and money and worries, they're all on top of you, right? Mm-hmm. And what does that feel like? I would recommend it to anybody, right? You cannot watch it and not come away unmoved.
And why was it important to you to tell the story of a business pivot in this very human way?
When, every entrepreneur, I think probably every business is going to experience something like this, right? I don't think you could probably point to any business that it is exactly the way it started. Mm. At some point, you hit a wall and you have got to change, or you drop out, right? And I think delivering that, speaking to sort of the emotional aspect of that, has universal appeal, right? And in many instances, we're taking themes that are universally appealing and helping them understand what the entrepreneurial journey is going to be. And by putting it in an entertaining context, it feels like entertainment, but you're actually learning something, right? You're actually experiencing what does an entrepreneur go through. And it's not glamorizing. It's talking about what is it like to be an independent business. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, a lot of times when you just use the word entrepreneur, again, I'm using my air quotes to no effect. It conjures up a very, you know, or potentially even negative, you know, connotation. So in other words, of just completely cutthroat, you know, all about money,
yeah,
nothing about craft or, yeah, you know, growing a business on your own terms, putting something beautiful out into the world, something that you're proud of, obviously something that'll support you and your family. There's just a complete, I don't know, you know, there's a reason why there's so many parts of the world that just vilify business, is because that's the picture in their head is not of a positive thing.
Right.
And so many of our customers, they don't deserve to be painted with that same brush.
Well, so great. So you mentioned earlier on that actually kind of blooper reels are more important than highlights reels. So let's see if you're happy to go there a little bit. Tell us a bit about some of your own blooper reel, really, in terms of it's been an extraordinary 5 years. You know, MailChimp is a wonderful success. And at the same time, you must have had a few long dark nights of the soul or done things actually that didn't work out perhaps as well as some of the other things. Tell us a little bit about kind of lessons you learned along the way and perhaps some of those moments that give us as much insight as the success stories.
One of my biggest bloopers at MailChimp was essentially when I showed up, I was trying to actually redesign the entire website and also launch a new CMS. And I don't think I understood particularly well I feel like I understood what it entailed, but I didn't realize in an organization of a certain size, the business reaches a size where, you know, as a function, you just can't get there. You can't do things on your own. Hmm. And my, you know, I refer to that as, that was my V1 where I sort of, what did our COO called it? She says, like, well, you fell on your sword on that one. I was like, well, okay, yeah. So it didn't go well.
Right.
Basically, I spent a year on a project and it went nowhere. And or worse, what came out was a thing that was so bad that I couldn't even launch it. So it was you know, choose your metaphor, right? It was a black eye.
Yeah.
And it was humbling for me, because I've been in the business of launching websites since, like, you know, the mid-90s, right, when the browser came to life. So I've been doing it a long time, but I haven't been working in a business of this size across this number of constituents. So the people, again, it was the people part, and it was in some ways abandoning myself to the strengths of my team.
Right.
That an important thing for me to understand, and realize that, you know, if it's big and important in the business, I shouldn't and I couldn't really do it on my own.
Well, and you know, it links to some of the things you were talking about earlier, doesn't it? Which is giving people the freedom to fail. You talked earlier on about how you ostensibly run marketing, but that learning you had about, you know, abandoning yourself to the strengths of my team, that seems it's very much kind of born out of or reinforced by that in some kind of way, so that culture has emerged, you know, for you and for the company. And how much has that been crystallized to some degree? I mean, is anything written down about the culture within MailChimp, or is it just something that's kind of understood and lived on a daily basis?
So when you start at MailChimp, it's unlike, you know, any other onboarding, I think, in terms of how much time and effort and is put into, you know, sort of helping people kind of understand how it all works. It feels a little bit, I mean, I've never done this, but my sense is that if you worked at Disney, it would feel something like that. Like there's a lot of, you know, sort of the way things work that are important to why is the company successful.
Mm. Well, and it's interesting, isn't it? I think your Disney comparison is fascinating because that the sense that you have to work really hard to enable this creatively free environment. You know, you don't just show up and say, kind of do what you like and I'll keep an eye on it. It requires a lot of rigor to be free in that kind of way.
It really does. It really does. And what I like to do is help people realize that, you know, MailChimp can be a vehicle for making the change they want to see in the world.
Yeah.
And that might just be, I want to support, you know, women entrepreneurs, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of different ways for, just given our support of small business, given the importance of creating opportunity in the world, you know, that's something that I feel like there's a reason why people come to MailChimp, and beyond, of course, a paycheck and a place to kind of prove their mettle. Mm. It's ultimately, I feel like people are looking for meaning in the work that they do. And so I feel like we're in a really great place to do that.
And do you think, you know, again, when we were talking last week, you talked about how MailChimp is all about empowering the underdog. Do you think that's part of that kind of purpose and meaning that the people who work with you and around you kind of get excited by?
I really do. So I think empowering the underdog it motivates me. It gets me to kind of be excited about the work that we're doing. And I also get to, you know, it feels like there's purpose behind everything that we're doing, really.
Mm-hmm. Tom, thank you. That's been a really stimulating conversation. Thank you very much for joining us on the Overthrow podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Adam. It's really been a lot of fun.
Well, I'm now joined by Olivia Douglas, Global Business Leader at PHC, to discuss some of the key things that we both enjoyed and were struck by in Tom's interview. Welcome, Olivia.
Thank you, Adam. Very happy to be here.
So let's start with, I can't resist starting really with his observation coming from the founder's observation about here is a B2B company that wants to speak to the kind of the emotional side, or the emotional part of their customer. What was it that you kind of took from that and was struck by in that part of the conversation?
So I loved it, right? I think too often we go into work mode and you write things down on a piece of paper and human beings become audience descriptions or targets. And this realization that it doesn't matter what I'm selling, if I'm selling to businesses or if I'm selling to consumers, I'm always selling to people. These are people who behave like people. So even if they're in a very professional mindset and they're making decisions related to their business, they are still, they cannot help themselves. These are human beings. And so this notion, I loved what he said about, you know, humans are complex beings who use logic to give permission to do what emotion is telling you. And so connecting with people on an emotional level and getting them to feel a certain way about you and want to do business with you, I think is really interesting. And then you can follow up with the permission points that they feel like they need to defend the choice that they want to make. But as a B2B company, realizing that the very first thing you have to do is get people's attention and make them like you, make them feel something about you, I think is brilliant. And I wish every B2B business thought and felt that way and acted that way.
Mm. And I was struck because I think sometimes when people talk about, oh, well, you know, let's be kind of more human, they mean a kind of a tone of voice that's about warmth. But one of the things I really liked was he's telling that story about the little kind of gif of the person and the snake, and then the person has a little kind of the tongue comes out and it's a forked tongue, and then they kind of do a little high five. And he talks about how the amount of care that went into was a really small detail, but mm-hmm. for their community makes them feel seen. And mm-hmm. I thought it was a really interesting observation about It's sometimes the small things you do far beyond tone of voice alone that actually creates that connection. And I was reminded for some reason of a conversation I had ages ago with a cognitive psychologist in the States, who was cognitive anthropologist in the States, Bob Deutsch, who was talking about why he thought Bill Clinton got in the first time. And he said it wasn't because people liked Bill Clinton, it was because they thought he liked them. And I got that same kind of sense from MailChimp, which is they do things that make you feel they like you rather than just making you like them. I thought it was a really interesting kind of bit of depth in terms of that relationship that they'd built in there.
Yeah, I love that as well. And I think the recognition that they are reaching out to a lot of times the creative community, right? And so using creativity as well so that it is the same craft being applied and helping that community feel like you're one of us, right? He also talked a lot about, I want people to feel like MailChimp is people, right? Is a group of people working, not robots and algorithms doing this, but that we are people too. And we are people who are just like you.
I agree. And then there's a very sort of thin membrane between us and the brand of MailChimp. We can almost sort of put our hand through and kind of touch the people behind the brand. That's what we're having the relationship with, and that's what they're letting us see and be part of, is part of that relationship. And maybe that piece where he talks about, because the only one thing I love about this as a kind of the final interview is they are a challenger that's also all about empowering the underdog. Maybe that's that's part of also that sense of they're on our side and they're in our corner as well. That adds to that sense of kind of affiliation that you have with them.
Absolutely. You know, that sense that, you know, we're rooting for you. We care about what you care about. We value what you value. And look at that come through in everything we do. And again, the fact that they tap into creativity, which is to their customers, one of the most important things about why and how they exist, right? Mm-hmm. And so the sense that there is a person on the other side of MailChimp who understands me, not only understands me, but is pulling for me and is showing me that and acting in a certain way that says that they understand my problems, they understand what I'm trying to do, and they want me to be successful. It's really wonderful.
Yeah. And with that creativity came a disarmingly honest kind of acceptance of failure, didn't it? I mean, first of all, his own humanity shows up, you know, so he's not just a person representing a kind of a real and human brand, to kind of use the overthrow narratives. But I loved, he said, you know, I am ostensibly in charge of marketing, and another wonderful expression, I abandon myself to the strengths of my team. But he talks about the importance of the blooper reel, right? That owning up that this is not a kind of a squeaky clean perfect challenger case history that's kind of buffed and polished within an inch of its life, and where anything that's gone wrong has been didacted. He's actually quite front and center about things that went wrong, and that's part of the strength, I suppose, of that relationship, and you would imagine of the relationship of his team with him.
Sure. And I think, you know, this notion of, if you're really rooting for people and you really are humans together, then the pristine case study doesn't help anybody, right? What is helpful is, where can things go wrong? Where do things go wrong? And if we are rooting for entrepreneurs and small businesses, we want to help them see and anticipate other people's mistakes, right? And so that they can be ready for them, so that they can persevere through them when things get tough and they don't think that they're doing it all wrong, but that actually this is very normal and a part of the human side of growing and starting a business. So the blooper reel, I think, is very clever. And, you know, having that lead into their content series around showing the entire journey, right? If we're really rooting for entrepreneurs, what does this whole thing look like? And, you know, that does tie back to their business, because part of that is, how do you know when you're ready for what MailChimp has to offer as a part of your journey?
Yeah. And there was a confidence, I think, that came with that kind of acceptance of mistakes and a failure. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing about leaning into that mispronunciation during serial of MailChimp, and as he said, he sounded slightly astonished himself that they'd done it to the degree that they had done about really leaning into that and making a joke about people not remembering your brand name, which you would have thought is one of the kind of cardinal rules of successful marketing, right? Which is don't mess with that. It's such a ballsy thing to have done.
Well, I did love, you know, what he said, which was, and this seems to be how they think about everything over there. I mean, we talked a lot about culture as well, but this notion of have a very clear idea of who your customer is and what you're trying to accomplish, find creative people. And then, you know, once you've given them the brief, get out of the way, right? Mm-hmm. And really let them do what it is. If you value creativity, then you have to give creativity the space to breathe. And, mm-hmm. You know, what you need to be clear and firm on with people and the guardrails that you provide, and whether that's a brief to their creative agencies or even, you know, when people come in and start working at MailChimp and what that culture is, mm-hmm. getting very clear on this is the world that we live in. This is the space and this is what we're trying to accomplish. Now go and be free and do it and move quickly and nimbly and make sure that, you know, make sure that the brief is clear, but otherwise have at it and trust your people.
Yes. Absolutely. That balance between, as you say, that initial clarity when you first arrive at MailChimp and getting a really good understanding of what the culture means and then leaving you to it. I think that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It is a creative culture and it's for creative people. But even so, there's a truth there about creativity and challenger cultures that I think we could learn a lot from.
Absolutely.
So what else did you like kind of culturally? I mean, I know that you were interested in the kind of sort of listening hard, changing fast kind of aspect of it. What struck you particularly there?
I really liked that listening to customers is everybody's job, right? That a lot of times in an organization, you go, oh, the voice of the that's marketing's role. Marketing says that the customer says this. Hmm. And that gets passed on, you know, a secondhand information, and then the humanity is stripped out of it, right? And the fact that at MailChimp, it is very much everybody's job and something that everybody embraces is to go listen to our customers. At the end of the day, if we really care about them, this is on everybody to do. And then that ability to change quickly, I think, is based on what we were just talking about, right? So once you hear from something from the customer, don't be so proud to think that you were perfect, right? Go off and run with it. And as long as everybody's clear on what we're doing, you know, you're off to the races. But I really liked that, you know, the voice of the customer didn't just come through marketing. It wasn't one group's job. It's everybody's job.
So just as we start to wind up then, Olivia, what's your kind of your final thought about what we learned from MailChimp about what it means to be a kind of real and human challenger?
I think, I mean, if I were to walk away with one thing, I think it's this notion that it doesn't matter what you're selling, right? Even though MailChimp is a B2B company, they think of their customers as people. And so this notion that consumer grade means more delightful, more beautiful, and easier to use, I think the idea that you bring that to no matter who your audience is, no matter what you're doing, be consumer grade, be delightful, be beautiful, and be easy to use. And you will be able to successfully engage with and, you know, connect with your audience. They are people after all.
Yes. Brilliant. Brilliant. Great way to finish. Olivia, thank you very much indeed. It was great, great talking to you.
Thanks, Adam. Likewise.
Well, that brings us to the end of the final episode of the Initial Six podcasts. But for those of you who are weeping with frustration at home because it's the end of the series, there's in fact going to be a bonus episode coming up shortly, which is going to feature Harold Kly from Reddit and Rebecca Birchall from PhD. And we're going to be doing two things in that. We're going to be, first of all, reviewing the first six episodes and looking at some of the myths about challengers that we hope it's helped blow up and dispel. And then secondly, we're going to be looking at Reddit itself as a challenger and the importance of the challenger mindset to Reddit's expansion globally. But until then, if you're interested in learning more about the different challenger narratives, there is overthrowdude.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next time.